Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haverstroh.
Tom, we are on the eve of Top Chef 16, and we thought we'd put together a little teaser, just a little taste, a little amuse-bouche, to get us ready for Top Chef Kentucky.
You and I have been to Kentucky before. At my wedding!
I was at your wedding in Kentucky. Was it not the Brown Hotel, home of the hot brown, the most famous food ever, purveyed by the good people of the Commonwealth of Kentucky?
That's right.
Is it a Commonwealth or a state?
It's a Commonwealth, I believe.
I think it's a Commonwealth. Absolutely. Good for them. Good for them.
My wife is from Louisville, Kentucky. She went to Ballard High School. She has... I opened my eyes to the cuisine and the libations of Kentucky. And you know what? Top Chef followed suit. They decided to do season 16 in Kentucky, not just in Louisville, apparently. I just watched the Bravo teaser video. They're going all over Kentucky. So it's a beautiful state, beautiful food, beautiful people. And I'm excited.
I mean, beautiful food, I think that is, as a declarative statement goes, I mean, I don't think controversial, but I mean, what do we have? I mean, it was sort of the starting lineup. I mean, we on the forget the libations right now, because we know about the bourbon and the mint julep. Absolutely. In terms of spirits, Kentucky is second to none. But after the hot brown, you've got like the only one I know is sort of the is it the burgoo, which is that like kind of squirrel possum stew?
Yeah,
I've never had burgoo. I've read about it. It seemed like one of those sort of kind of classic Appalachian American foods, like just you get what you kill.
And yeah.
For sheer subsistence, the great Scotch Irish people of the uplands of Kentucky would basically take roadkill and make it into food.
Bourbon balls. Bourbon balls are delicious. They're just essentially these desserts, like kind of like dates. No, sorry. Getting that mixed up. Bourbon balls, like almost like the Milky Way kind of sugary sweet filling, but it's just alcoholic. So you can fill it with whatever Makers or wild turkey or whatever you do. But my mother-in-law makes some really delicious bourbon balls with – it's a chocolate covering with a pecan thrown on top. It's delicious. There's also Derby Pie, which is kind of just a sugar bomb. Derby Pie after a Kentucky Derby, of course, is like a cookie, chocolatey walnut – pie. It's delicious, but it's also just super sweet.
So we've got a cast. We know this. Listeners can go onto the Bravo TV website. You can look at the cast. Before long, you and I will have a draft of the season 16 competitors. And judging from our performance last year, the draft will have a zero correlation with the potential success of the contestants, which only underscores kind of something that I think Tyler kind of, in conversation with him last season, that one of the things we've learned kind of getting to know some of these chefs and getting to know the production of the show and whatnot is that Top Chef's sort of an entirely different event from cooking or chefing, right? Who you see in the finales of these shows are obviously extremely talented chefs, but chefs that may or may not be infinitely more talented than the people they've eliminated, that it is a special skill set to flourish on this show. You can have the greatest training in the world. You can do the Thomas Keller, Alain Ducasse prep prestige trail. And at the end of the day, there is a very particular fast twitch kind of skill that is demanded to be a champ in Top Chef that has, somewhat of a correlation to your skills in the kitchen, but kind of is its own freaky sixth sense.
Yeah, it's almost like you're judging basketball players based on their combine and their measurements, and interviews, but never seen them play basketball before. You know, like what seems like a good Top Chef contestant on paper doesn't actually translate into the actual game. So Tyler, in our interview last year, if you remember, he was just like, I bleeping hate quick fires. Like, he hates them. Like, he's like, they're stupid. They're quick. It's just the worst. And of course, he might not have been good at quick fires. He won the first challenge, which I took as meaning he's going to win this whole damn thing, because statistically, looking at Top Chef contestants, which I did, the best predictor of winners is the person who won the first day, and he won the first day. And I thought, man, this is, LeBron James going number one in 2003. And it wasn't. Turns out he was more like Oliver Candy, not because Oliver Candy wasn't bad, but was bad, but it was just Tyler.
He was pretty bad. He was pretty bad. Michael Oliver Candy was pretty bad. I was a season ticket holder, but hold on a second. So now remind me again, because this was one of the great revelations of doing the show with you last season. It was the person not who wins the first quick fire, but who wins the first challenge.
Yes, the first event, the first elimination challenge.
The first elimination event, right.
Was the most important of all of them. The most important challenge to win was the first one. And you'd think, all right, well, I mean, there's 14 contestants, 15 contestants. How important could it be? But if you win that first one, there is a strong correlation of winning the whole thing. And we'll get into that after the first episode, talking about, whether we want to draft that winner of the first episode again. But this is an interesting group of chefs. One thing I noticed, Kevin, looking in this group of 15, there isn't really a Bruce Kallman here, right? Like, there's not famous chef, you think?
Not a super famous. I would say that if you're Eddie Conrad and you were the chef de cuisine at Laurel in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, yes. that is a resume item that did pop out to me. It's a beloved restaurant among foodies in Philadelphia. I have not yet eaten there. It's a very tough table to get. It's in that neighborhood, just kind of south of, not actually all the way in South Philly, but between South Philly and Rittenhouse Square, kind of, on the way down there. And it is chef de cuisine at that joint is a major resume item. I mean, you look at the 16 contestants, I think 15 or 16 we saw online, that would definitely stand out to me. On the other hand, you also have, I was talking about that sort of that prestige track. And there's this young chef named Brandon Rosen, who notably grew up with a family chocolate factory in Michigan, but then went on and did the Alain Ducasse, the Thomas Keller. He's now a private chef in Silicon Valley. Lord knows what you must get to be a private chef for one of those like techie people in the Allbirds.
I feel like they just deconstruct everything. Disrupt this dish. That's what I'm imagining a Silicon Valley chef to do.
It's baby food. Just that. but at any rate, so that would be that at least in terms of kitchens one's worked in. I kind of love there's some really fun bios. I mean, I always am interested in the local contestants, right? They always kind of have a few close to home chefs. There's a chef named Sarah Bradley from Paducah, Kentucky. And what I love about her is it spoke to me was she's half Jewish and half Appalachian. So there's going to be a little, and I love as a Southern Jew who kind of grew up with dinner tables that had both like kugel and okra. That's always been a thing for me. So I was very excited about that. And there's some other very interesting chefs, and we'll know these people a lot better now this time next week, obviously, than we do now.
Yeah. Eddie Conrad, a note about him is he worked under Nicholas from Top Chef season 9, who beat out Nina Compton. Very controversial finish. Nicholas Elmy, who I guess is
the owner
of Laurel, or I guess the chef there at Laurel. So I think this is the pedigree there for Eddie is really strong. Not only is he a big fan, you're a big fan of the restaurant, but also that restaurant has Top Chef ties. So a lot of controversy around Nicholas beating out Nina Compton and Luis. I can't pronounce his last name, but he did just get named, Kevin. I emailed this to you. I don't know if you saw it. He just got named the sexiest chef alive by People Magazine. This Luis from season 9, who was in like the finals with Nina Compton and Nicholas. So anyway, that was just a tangent there, but Eddie's got some strong pedigree. It's like working under Popovich or something like that. So that's good for him. Have you eaten at any of these restaurants through these bios?
Yeah. I mean, you know, a handful of them. One of the contestants, sorry, I just went to your most sexy chef alive link. So I clicked off of my worksheet here. But Michelle Minori ran the kitchen at Flour and Water in San Francisco. And I'm not normally a big pasta guy, but I mean, that's an exceptionally good restaurant. And one might imagine that she might take the contestant in Top Chef who forever wants to do pasta for every challenge. You can imagine that if you ran the kitchen at Flour and Water, that we might see a great deal of pasta making from Michelle Minori.
She's a Joe Stash.
Yeah. Another one is an early, not favorite of mine, but a fan favorite of mine, Nini Nguyen, who is a Vietnamese American chef who grew up in New Orleans and worked at, I think, one of the more historically underrated restaurants in New Orleans, Coquette.
Oh yeah,
which is a place
you gave me a recommendation to go to Coquette once.
Yeah, Coquette's fantastic. I mean, it actually has so much going for it, just apart from just really well executed food. It's also a great place to go. You know, the problems you run into in New Orleans is there aren't enough days and nights. You know, not enough nights for the dinners you want and the restaurants you want. And Coquette always does this great. I don't know how it's been a couple of years, but like always like a great $30 lunch prefix that you could just go and just have a great, great meal and sample their food. You know, it'd be obviously a smaller set, but Coquette is always one of my favorite underrated New Orleans restaurants. And she kind of, I think, came up through that kitchen. I don't know that she had a very senior position there, but she certainly got a glimpse. There are a handful of restaurants. It's interesting. We have a chef from Dothan, Alabama, you know, a Gulf Southerner. I think a chef from Cincinnati. So not as many NBA cities for the two of us, great food originates.
Pablo Limon from 27 restaurant in Miami. Have you been to that Miami Beach restaurant before?
You know, I have not. I mean, the truth of the matter is the Miami Heat have not been very good since you left. And I haven't had really much occasion to go to Miami recently, which is a shame. Like I need to get to Art Basel or something because, I'm really behind on my Miami. You know, I'm still stuck in Michelle Bernstein land.
Yeah, the 27 is an amazing meal and a really cool restaurant. It's like almost like in a house. You feel like you're in a living room when you eat there. Just the vibe there at 27 is fantastic. So Pablo Limon, that's a really good thing for me is seeing a Miami Beach you know, hailing from there is great because a lot of successful people on Top Chef have come from Miami. We just talked about Nina Compton, but also Jeremy Ford. I guess Pablo Limone worked with or under Jeremy Ford, who won Top Chef. I guess he's Crudo Bro, if you remember Crudo Bro.
So, I love Crudos.
yes.
I've been playing around with Crudos in the last several
months. What kind of, like a hamachi?
I've been pickling like these like serrano peppers and I think you even gave me a like on one of my little Instagram crudos, you know, truffle oil is a wonderful thing. But really like scallop crudo is still like the raw scallop crudo with just a little acid, an interesting oil. Like it's just, I will never fully accept the ridicule that chefs direct toward those who engage in maximum crudo.
If you have fresh seafood, there is no better thing than a crudo.
Like, it's a fish. Like raw fish is perfect food. Forget the fact that it's healthy and guilt free. Like raw fish brushed with a little acid and a little oil or some component is kind of perfect. Interested to see a young chef from Pinch and Plate, a place I've heard about but not have been in the Washington, D.C. area, is also.
He's one of the people's sexiest chefs in America. He was one of the 10 finalists, so he's already a finalist for that, and now he's a finalist for Top Chef. Eric Adjipong, he's from Ghana with a lot of West African flavors, so I'm interested to see Eric's performance in Top Chef. How would you
I have eaten in Ghana. I ate in Ghana for I went to Ghana. I had my fufu and my banku and all my goat stews and whatnot. So I'm excited to see a Ghanaian American chef. The food in Ghana is league average. It's not great.
Okay.
It ain't like Eastern Africa to me, like greater sign than Western Africa when it comes to food, and I will probably get many comments to the contrary.
You know what, Kevin? Trip. We'll have to bring Eric onto the show for him to rep West African food.
No, I really enjoyed eating in Ghana. Look, it's all better than, you know, I mean, hell, you go, there are regions in the world that I've eaten much poorly. I had a good time eating in Ghana.
Speaking of places that Kevin has eaten poorly at, couple people from Boston here.
Yeah, you know, I need to lay off Boston a little bit. Like I probably should lay off Boston a little bit.
We have Brian Young from Cultivar, who calls himself a butcher slash charcutier. How do you pronounce that? He is someone who does charcuterie. Charcutier? Is that right?
It's a charcutier. I think you're right. I don't know.
He is a charcutier. And then there's Chef Adrian Wright from Boston Urban Hospitality, the executive chef there. So we have two people from Beantown. Interesting.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer. And I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal, ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like, yeah, whatever.
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
It will be an interesting season. I mean, I'm curious to get impressions from the first challenge so that we can do our draft. I thought one of the more humbling and kind of amusing parts of Pack Your Knives, season one for us, season 15 for them, was just how utterly awful we were at drafting and scouting talent based on an episode of television.
And, I have the stat here, Kevin, by the way. 43% of Top Chef winners also won the first elimination challenge. That's a pretty big stat. That's a big number. Just about half of the winners also claimed the victory on the first elimination challenge. So as you watch this episode coming up here on Thursday night, keep in mind that it is just about a coin flip whether this person will be the Top Chef winner.
By the way, Pinch and Plate, I am learning, is not a restaurant.
It is not a restaurant. It sounds like a restaurant.
It's not a restaurant.
It's got an and in there.
It's got an ampersand. Just because it has an ampersand does not mean it has a storefront. And what we're learning is actually it is similar to, I think, you know, sort of at least in Los Angeles here, the Wolf's Mouth experience. It is a pop-up dinner party. And so, like, you book a dinner party, and so I mean, they're not caterers. I mean, it is truly a kind of roving pop up, but it is not a restaurant. So, Pinch and Plate.
You know, that's interesting. There's a couple backgrounds here that aren't your standard big name chef or big name chef, executive chef at a big name restaurant. There's Cooking with Caitlin Steininger from Cincinnati. She basically built out a digital show called Cooking with Caitlin and is now the executive chef at Cooking with Caitlin, which is CWC in Cincinnati. So that's also – I like that. I like how we're kind of democratizing the Top Chef. So there's people from all different places, different backgrounds coming into Top Chef.
Yeah, I mean, am I remembering incorrectly, but that the sort of, hey, I run a catering company or I'm a private chef – chefs have not performed terribly well relative to other contestants.
I would imagine it's something to look into for this season, right?
Yeah. It's maybe it's that there's something about the heat of the kitchen, with the full house that provides the, you know, the chops that you, you need to flourish in a competition. I don't know, but, I always feel like there are always a couple of talented chefs who nevertheless are sort of private chefs or caterers who, you know, don't advance as far as the, you know, not so much the people who grew up in the prestige restaurant. Actually, it's often the line cook or the people who've had the the sort of that experience in restaurants. But what do we know about season before we go? I mean, what do we know about season 16?
We can say it because it was put out on the video promo, but there is a twist to this season. There's three restaurant wars, and there's not just two. There's three restaurant wars this season. They're going to be at Churchill Downs for a couple, or maybe one of, I have no idea if it's a couple, but they'll be there. A couple like tea leaves from the promo video is John Calipari. They're going to be at Rupp Arena for the Kentucky Wildcats. He will be a part of this season. So, you know, I think that's really it, Kevin, is they listened to our show and they said, we need more crossover with basketball. And they brought in John Calipari. I wonder what it's like to cook for John Calipari.
I mean, you know what it's like to talk to John Calipari.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the guy is just effusive.
He's awesome. I mean, every time I see him, he is just shaking everybody's hand. He owns the room. He's super fiery, super happy. I'm sure he says he remembers who I am every time he sees me, but he probably doesn't. But he just makes you feel like he knows you. And that's just how you got to be as a college coach. So I'm curious to see how he does as a Top Chef judge this season at Rupp Arena with a bunch of screaming Wildcat fans. That's going to be an interesting environment. I think another – we have someone from Iowa, Kevin, on this – Kevin Sharp is his name.
Oh, wait. Someone told me that Des Moines has an absolutely fantastic restaurant. Let me see if this is indeed the place. And no, I don't know if it was Brazen. No, that's in Dubuque, so it would not be. But there is one of the best restaurants I've eaten at in America this year. By the way, I just got back from Tulsa and had two of the best meals of the year.
Oh, wow.
In Tulsa. I think one of the things that's happening in this country, and we'll talk about it a little bit this season, is just like, I mean, I just think the notion that you got to be in New York, Los Angeles, or San Francisco, you know, those days are over. I mean, I've among my list of notable meals this year, like Tulsa is on the list. And there are just a ton of really good restaurants all over the country. And I think that sort of geographical marker means less and less.
Yeah, we've got two people from Philadelphia, but nobody from L.A. in this cast, I don't think. I mean, at least Michelle Minori, she was at Faith and Flower. Isn't that by the arena, Staples Center?
Yes, it's about six blocks north of Staples Center. They had a milky cocktail that everyone liked, and I forget what it's called.
But it's a white Russian.
No, it was something else. It was milk punch. I think it was like milk punch. And I'm not a sweet cocktail kind of guy, but that was sort of the thing there. It was a great room. It was a merely decent restaurant.
Yeah, I've taken some basketball people out to dinner because there's, I mean, where would you go if you're going to Staples Center and you want to get a good meal? There's not a ton to work with there.
Well, I think you have to go east now to the art. Yeah, walking is – it's pretty still a dead zone for great restaurants. I think if you get over to the historic core, like you got Shibumi, where I think you and I have eaten.
Yes.
We had a great meal at Shibumi. So you got to kind of – if you're willing to walk 15 to 20, you've got a ton of options. If you want to go 5 to 10 minutes from Staples Center in LA Live, other than – obviously people like Broken Spanish. People like it a lot more than I do. It is a perennially highly rated restaurant in Los Angeles. I like it less than the masses.
If we're still doing scouting reports, I'll just say that my favorite Louisville joint is Proof on Main. We've been there together. Yeah. with your boyfriend and Allison and I, the four, and Madeline. I think Madeline was there too when we went to Proof on Main.
That was a very good brunch. Excellent.
Yes.
Brunch.
And then my favorite bar, Garage Bar, is really super fun. They got ping pong tables outside. They got these like kind of Dale Earnhardt, like NASCAR. There's like an accident, almost like a sculpture in the front of the bar area. The Garage Bar has great pizzas, great cocktails, great beer. But if you want an amazing cocktail, head over to Rye. Have you been to Rye?
I have not.
Rye is an excellent place for a cocktail in Louisville, of course.
But you know where I have been in Louisville? I've been to the Saturday Farmers Market, and that was awesome. not Farmers Market, the flea market, I mean. The flea market.
That's right. Sorry, I'm choking up. Because didn't you and Eric go over to the flea market together?
We went to the flea market. It was fantastic.
Like a real Americana experience.
Oh yeah, yeah. I got a Johnson Humphrey political bumper sticker. It's really cool. All kinds of crazy stuff.
Favorite bourbon before we go, Kevin. Favorite bourbon. I know you've been off the hard liquor recently. Not too much in it. We used to have a big heyday with bourbon, but what was your favorite bourbon when you used to?
Well, I mean, Pappy obviously is sort of a special category. I mean, my house bourbon is still Michter's Rye, which is wonderful. I mean, I just think for the money is a great. I mean, Pappy Van Winkle, obviously. I mean, one of my late uncle who and I were very much into that. But so that,
if you
that
have some Pappy at home, send it to.
Well, they got ripped off, right? Like they got like robbed. I mean, that was sort of the thing a few years ago, right? Like their entire inventory was. Did they ever catch the people?
There's a huge story around that, which we should probably tell. I mean, they might bring up Pappy in this season, so maybe we'll hold off on that. But there's a huge little scandal around that.
If you are a listener and you have information on the heist,
or have information on where we can get some nice Pappy without, having to give away my firstborn daughter, that'd be great. If you're not, if the price tag is a little lower than Pappy, I think everyone should go out and try some Noah's Mill. It's super caramelly. It's got a high alcohol content. So this is not something you put in a mixer. You do not put it in a mint julep.
You certainly don't put it in the baby's bottle, but yes.
Do not put it in the baby's bottle, but Noah's Mill is a delicious nightcap if you're looking for a heavy bourbon just to have a little taste while you play cards or while you watch your late night TV show. Go for the Noah's Mill. And also 610 Magnolia from Edward Lee, who's probably going to be on this season, former Top Chef season 9. Edward Lee is from Louisville, and I'm probably missing a whole bunch of Louisville ties to Top Chef, but I'm excited to see this season, the rolling hills of Kentucky, the horses, the bourbon. We'll see about the hot brown. I'm not too much of a fan of a hot brown because I always want to take a nap afterwards. It's one of those very heavy, just bacon, open face turkey sandwich with sauce. And it's a heavy dish. So it's one of those, if you're hungover after a night of bourbon, go for it. Otherwise, you could probably skip the hot brown. Sorry, Brown Hotel. I should give you a better shout out.
Yes, and I'm going to go into the streets of Los Angeles and find the goods for my burgoo stew.
Yes.
And find some appropriate roadkill. We don't really have possums here. We have coyotes and raccoons. I think raccoon is a permissible meat in a burgoo.
Is it?
I think
coyotes, I don't know if you want to eat coyote.
It tastes like chicken.
One last thing, shout out, a heartfelt shout out to Fatih as she, battles cancer and, lights up everyone's world. She is, in the Pack Your Knives hearts, and hopefully she, we'll get to talk to her, or just at the very least, see her beautiful writing that she just wrote an amazing story, that you should check out her Instagram. Chef Fatih was incredible thing about the lessons that she's learning, as she battles, this tough diagnosis. So Fatih, we love you. We wish you the best. And Joe Flam, I had a meal with, Joe Flam in Chicago. Everybody from the season 15, we miss you. We want to have you back on. So if you want to come back on for this season and kind of be our, eyes from behind the curtain, please give us a shout out. And hopefully these contestants, Kevin, are going to be just as likely to come on the show as last year's. That was super fun.
That would be very cool. The in-season commentary of existing contestants. A lot of fun.
Have you seen that? Have you seen that Tyler and Bruce are doing a restaurant together in Glastonbury, Connecticut?
I did not, because, I went to Union recently with Eric and learned that Bruce is no longer at Union and was sorely missed. So man. I had no idea. So Bruce is going to go back to the East Coast and they're going to do something in Glastonbury. We might, that's not a terrible trip for me. We might just have to meet up in Glastonbury at some point.
They're doing, I think it's going to be a pizza joint. I guess they're going to try to take down, why am I blanking out on the
Frank Pepe's?
Pepe's.
There is enough love for everybody in Connecticut. There is enough love and enough pizza for everybody in Connecticut. We needn't take anybody down. It's celebrate the diversity of pizza.
Exactly. So we're looking forward to this season. Hit subscribe, rate, and review. Pack your knives at your local pod center, wherever you get it. And also tell your friends and have a Top Chef party this Thursday. I'll be watching, and we'll get back to you guys shortly after the episode. Excited.
Indeed. We'll see you soon.
All right.